Fancy boy over here.
I like nice denim.
Take two.
Allow myself to introduce myself.
Rodgers alone with a shotgun. Three receivers left, two to the right. Pressure rolling right. Right side looking. Rainbows high and deep. The end zone. And it is.
Yes! Touchdown and a dagger!
Welcome to the APC Podcast, a Favre Week edition. We have football on Sunday and a quarterback to induct into the Hall of Fame who meant so much to so many of us this weekend as we record this on a Thursday. Plenty to get to today on the show, including a Packers Hall of Fame wide receiver who caught more touchdowns than anybody did from Brett Favre. Antonio Freeman is going to join us today, so we will get to that. We've also put together a nice little audio montage of some highlights from Brett Favre's appearance on John Gruden's quarterback camp.
I called it the Cliff's Notes.
The Cliff's Notes, that's right, of Brett Favre's appearance on that. So we're going to get to that. And, of course, we're going to get to headlines as well. I'm Alex Patakis. You can interact with me at Alex Patakis. You can interact with all of us on Twitter. Ben Foldy is at Ben Foldy, at Outside Slant for Zach, at Acme Pack & Co. for the site. And you can email the show at theapcpodcast@gmail.com. Ben?
What up?
Big week for you. I saw you in a suit today.
I was wearing the monkey suit.
And now you're wearing a wife beater and jeans.
This is, you know...
it's quite the transition.
It's the duality of men. Of men used, you know, in the highly masculine
sense. I like it. How'd the interview go?
I think it went all right. Nice. We'll see.
You looked
Fingers crossed.
You looked the part.
I looked a part.
You definitely
I don't know if it was the part, but it was a part.
I looked part.
Zach looked extremely uncomfortable today as we were doing a little bit of brainstorming as he was getting incessantly hit on by our waitress at an establishment near our studio here.
Wow, it put me on the
in
spot.
In Chinatown. Yeah. What? You didn't do anything wrong?
Does Robin listen to this?
I don't know.
Well,
probably not.
Okay.
Wouldn't that give her some sense of pride?
It's
that
true.
Her man is highly sought after.
She's not insecure in our relationship.
All right.
Well, I'm sorry for calling you out.
No,
but if
fine.
It's any consolation,
fine.
You were having none of it.
Yeah.
No. You played great defense.
It's true. You're the only person I know who complains about being hit on.
Yeah. Sorry.
That was weird.
Jeez. All right. Let's get into it. We've got a lot of news and notes from training camp. We'll get to headlines as we review some of the biggest things going on at acmepackingcompany.com.
Headline music.
I love the headline
music. We're in the saloon now. That's what I feel like every time I hear this.
Giddy up. All right, everybody. It is time for headlines brought to you by absolutely nobody. Corporate America, get at us. Let's start it off with Bubble Watch, a piece up on the blog now by Jake Hyman. Where do wide receivers stand after a week of training camp? Jake gives summaries of each receiver's performance so far in training camp. So after a week of practices, what's changed? What's changed the most, rather, about the wide receiver battle, Alex?
I believe the thing that has changed the most is that the battle has lost a lot of intrigue, because I am now a firm believer that Ty Montgomery is not going to be a part of it. He's still on the physically unable to perform list. Rob Domofsky at ESPN.com wrote a piece talking about the severity of his surgery, which he had in December, which apparently contained three parts. He had tight ropes inserted into his ligaments to hold them in place, a cartilage repair, and a microfracture procedure on his talus.
Tight ropes?
Yes, tight ropes.
Okay.
So Montgomery's basically saying, hey, everyone who's bitching, this is a way more serious injury than any of you guys thought, and it seemed like a phantom thing that happened early in the season. I think that takes the intrigue out, because if Ty Montgomery doesn't factor in, people were talking about them keeping seven receivers. It seems like almost a lock now that they would keep six, and those six are the obvious. That's Jordy Nelson. You need six as an insurance policy in case he gets re-injured, so then it's Cobb, Adams, Janice, Aberderis, and Trevor Davis. So I kind of feel like all these guys are safe now, because I'm betting on Montgomery starting on the physically unable to perform list, and perhaps even having a stint on injured reserve at some point this season, because now I'm going all the way the other way. I was excited about him. Now I think, screw that. I'm not. No
screw you and your body.
Yeah. No. I want him to get healthy.
The Derek Sherrod treatment,
No. I think it's unfair for us to expect him to factor into a training camp battle when he's yet to be cleared to play any kind of football.
Seems reasonable enough.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess what stuck out to me is that nobody is separating themselves as a number three, it sounds like. I mean, it's like, it'll be like, Davante Adams has great day, next day. Davante Adams has terrible day. Janice drops everything. Janice makes good play. So the fact that I'm a little worried that we're not going to have a clear three, or someone who is really, you know, that defenses have to respect across the field from Jordy.
That's what preseason football is all about.
So I guess we'll see, but I would like to see more consistency out of, I guess, mostly I want to see more consistency out of Adams, because I think he's the likeliest three, and I just want him to play like it.
Yeah, I guess I was struck most by, you know, a few weeks ago we were talking a little bit about wide receivers and pretty much made Aberderis a footnote, and it seems like a lot of people are reporting that he's having pretty much the best camp from the wide receiver perspective. So I think that that's a layer of intrigue that has piqued my interest.
I mean, I think where Aberderis is a little bit in trouble is that I think of him primarily as a slot guy, and Cobb has that pretty on lock. But I think, you know, with him and Trevor Davis, they'll both have a chance probably to show off on special teams, and we'll see.
All right. Moving on. Next up on the blog, written by our corporate overlord, Evan Tex Western. How many future Hall of Famers are on the Packers' 2016 roster? This is piggybacking off of a Bill Barnwell piece that projected potential Hall of Famers on every NFL roster. Tex discusses the prospects of five players: Rodgers, Matthews, Peppers, Jordy Nelson, and Josh Sitton. So do you guys agree with this list, Alex?
I agree that there are two that I think are locks to get in. I disagree that there are three. I'm not certain that Clay Matthews would make it in. The thing everyone would agree with is Aaron Rodgers, if he retired tomorrow, is in the Hall of Fame. He's got a Super Bowl ring. He's got two MVPs. He's probably going to be in the top 15 in all-time touchdown passes after this season. He's like a couple away from the next guys on the list, and he's done it all while throwing way fewer interceptions than everybody else.
Yeah.
Julius Peppers is in. I will say one thing. I fundamentally disagree with the argument against Julius Peppers and the argument against Clay Matthews, other than Clay Matthews maybe not having quite enough production, that they need another ring, another title. Julius Peppers would have a title. Why the hell would a defensive end need a title to get into the Super Bowl? Yeah. I think it's silly to measure quarterbacks by wins, and I understand when you're talking legacy, like, is this guy better than Montana? Is he better than Brady? Why, maybe you would look at that, because quarterbacks influence the team more than anybody else. Great pass rushers can do a lot, but J.J. Watt hasn't won shit, and J.J. Watt's a Hall of Fame player in my mind, so I think that's total BS, and if Barnwell's going to argue that Peppers isn't good, you know, is... might be borderline because he doesn't have a ring. Like, what can he actually do to win himself a ring when he was playing in Chicago?
Yeah. And Carolina, pre-Carolina being decent.
Although,
yeah.
did he play in the Super Bowl? He played in the Super Bowl with Carolina, right? Or was that way before his time? He's not that old.
He might have been on that team. Let's look it up.
Yeah. Musin Muhammad and Steve Smith and sure. Jake Daylight come and he got Adele Ohm or whatever. I hate Chris Berman, but
that's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah, I'll never think of Jake Daylight.
He might have been a rookie
that.
On that team.
Okay, well, while we get our fact checkers on that, we're going to move on and we'll verify that later. But
finally, come on, hurry.
Going off blog here, Rob Domofsky of ESPN is reporting that Brett Favre's Hall of Fame locker display includes both a Packers and a Vikings jersey. Does this rub you the wrong way, Alex?
It doesn't, actually. I understand why some Packers fans were mad about this and why they just want to enjoy the weekend and say, you know what, I just want to remember the great times. But to me, if your locker in the Hall of Fame is going to tell a story of your entire career, the story of Brett Favre is not complete without the summer heading into the 2008 season, without the heartbreak, I think, that so many Packers fans endured by him coming to Lambeau and kicking the crap out of them. So, like, it's the most Brett Favre thing ever. On a Hall of Fame weekend where he's going to tell amazing stories that give us all warm and fuzzies, we're also going to be reminded that, yeah, this guy was also capable of breaking our heart because he wanted to get back at us. So you take the good with the bad. The good outweighs the bad. But it's the story of Brett Favre. He's now eternally maddening for Packers fans, both in his play and
personality.
It's the all-time leading interception to his all-time leading touchdown, right?
Man. Yes, exactly.
Poetic. Oh, that's why we keep
him. He's a man of duality, speaking of me in a suit and a wife beater. That's like the Brett Favre condition.
Yeah, it absolutely is. All right, why don't we get ourselves why don't we give ourselves the feels, as we've been saying leading into this thing, and listen to some Brett Favre audio, because nothing can get you in the Hall of Fame mood like Brett Favre talking in circles, asking himself questions, and then saying that he has no answer to the question that he is asking. And oh, by the way, if we bored you to sleep, John Gruden will get you fired up too.
Because this guy right here is blah, blah, blah.
That guy loves football.
Let me
loves
tell you football. About Antonio I love Freeman, his, yeah. man.
Poor Robert Brooks over there.
You broke my new split X wide out.
Okay, yeah, we'll queue up that audio here, and but the Gruden QB camp video is about 45 minutes long, so if you haven't seen it,
it's available on YouTube.
Yeah, it is available on YouTube, but if you don't have time, if you're just sitting at your desk and you want to listen to the audio instead of the video here, here's a 3-minute condensed version of that. So get ready to get the warm and fuzzies.
Atlanta has selected Brett Favre, quarterback, Southern Mississippi.
The first thing he says to me is, hey, Mississippi, what school are you from? And I said, I'm from Southern Miss. And he says, dang, we drafted the wrong guy. We wanted a guy from Mississippi State. Best thing about my Falcon career is it got me to Green Bay.
And look at the follow-through. I mean, you look like Nolan Ryan. I mean, boom! I mean, look at Robert Brooks. My rookie split end down here out of South Carolina. You broke two of his fingers on his dig route. These balls... Doink! I mean...
They got on you quick. I'd admit that, yeah. As far back as I can remember, when I went out to practice, every throw that I made, I wanted it to be the best throw you've ever seen. Safety's probably thinking they won't even attempt this throw. And Ty Detmer is funny because, like, in meetings the next week, he's like, why would you make that throw? And I said, because I can.
Throw it away. Kick the field goal.
Or
reverse your field, switch hands with the ball, make four guys miss, and to your left, throw a ball into a crowd for six.
But my first thought was, on any play with my arm strength, I may not let anybody know this, but my first thought was home run.
He says, Brett, throw the post to Robert Brooks. If he's not open, throw it away. We'll kick the field goal. We'll go to overtime. Do not scramble. You're running out to the huddle. He says, do not scramble. And you're like, got it.
Brett Favre.
Tell me about why you did this. What the hell's going on?
I don't know.
What? You got to be the most physical, tough guy that's walking around the face of the earth.
Or the dumbest.
Favre is going to return to the game here.
You can't keep this guy out.
He rolls right. He throws in some touchdown.
I wanted those guys to know you had to bring more than that. Even though I was thinking, boy, I hope they don't bring any more.
The night you played in Oakland when you lost your dad. How'd you do that? How did you do this, Brett?
It was a simple decision for me. There was no doubt whatsoever that I needed to play in that game. He would have kicked me right in the you-know-what if I wouldn't. It had to drop in like a butterfly with sore feet. It had to drop in like that.
Like a what?
A butterfly with sore feet. It had to come in just as gingerly.
I think it's a persona that he has. He likes. He likes to come across in a self-deprecating, hey, I'm just a simple guy from a simple place. But he's got a photographic memory. He can remember plays, formations. He does a lot of sophisticated things.
Red right, 22 dancers, east other go. That's east right slot, F right, 200 jet. That's green right, Fox 2X1 hook. Just trips left, 300 jet.
Call this formation.
That's east left slot, F left, 300 jet. Tight end's got a hook. Brown right, A right, two jet flankers. Look at that hole.
I thought you guys practiced this thing for 100 years. And you're telling me this is some draw in the dirt, Hattiesburg, Mississippi special?
Yeah.
Eminy Christmas.
To pass Dan Marino, are you kidding me? I mean, for a little boy from South Mississippi who never threw the ball and maybe the greatest pure passer in history, does that make me a better passer than him? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. But it puts me in a status that that only he has.
Like a butterfly with sore feet.
I loved that. those are just the highlights of...
All the feels.
...of the John Gruden quarterback camp that Favre was a big part of, obviously. He was the center of it. Those two just got to reminisce, and that was awesome. Antonio Freeman was a part of that. We're going to talk to him here in a sec. But how does that make you feel? I mean, like, anytime you get to listen to Favre, right, it just kind of strikes a chord deep within you that you almost forget about for years. And then anytime he resurfaces, and then this weekend, obviously, in full, you're just like, man, I remember why I love that guy so damn much.
As long as I can remember... For myself personally, I've always been a fan of the full media experience of football, not just watching the game, but the press conferences and the broadcast itself. I always ate all that stuff up. And so growing up with Favre was just like the golden era, those post-game press conferences. Honestly, you know, we were talking earlier tonight about sort of discussing our favorite Favre moments, and so many of my favorite Favre moments are like press conference related and interview related. I could just listen to that guy. It's like whittling on a porch in a rocking chair. It's just like, sing it, Grandpa.
Yeah.
Love
it. It's like going fishing.
Yeah.
Every time he talks. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like actually, in a lot of ways, I wouldn't say I put Favre out of my mind, but I kind of was just like, Favre, you know? But now that this week's come up, I'm kind of like, okay, I have genuine closure. I can kind of like accept him back into my heart and like let the good feelings be there and coexist with the bad.
The duality of man.
Which are diminished, I would say, you know? I think, I wouldn't say he repented, and I don't know if he has to repent, but I would say that he seems a little more at ease. I guess when he left, he seemed so antagonistic that it was really hard to swallow. And the Vikings, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Although that year with the Jets, I remember going to a Jets-Dolphins game in South Florida and rooting like hell for Favre. Like, it was...
The Jets year is like
him parting ways with the organization was one thing, but it didn't get bad until obviously you knew he was going out of his way.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I felt like even back then, I always understood like if he's going to still play, he's going to try to win a championship. And the Vikings were a quarterback away from a title at that point.
Yeah, Adrian Peterson, and I mean, I can't blame him. You know, I almost always come down on the side of the player when it's like a player versus team thing, just because I think that the, you know, we talked about this a few weeks ago, but the contracts are such a fucking mess in the NFL that, you know, whenever players can kind of take their piece of the rock, I'm usually in favor of that. But with Favre, it just hurt. I mean, like, it was personal. It was personal for him and it was personal for us.
Yeah, I think it was.
And yeah, I mean, I'm thankful it all worked out. You know, I mean, if we didn't have Aaron Rodgers, we'd still be complaining probably, you know?
Oh, we got things to complain about.
Regardless. Oh yeah. No, but I just mean like, you know what? It ended up being a relatively painless transition for all parties.
Yeah.
You know, Favre got to be on a competitive team and the Packers got to be a competitive team again within 2 years.
And like, that's why other fans hate us.
It's true. We're blessed, man.
Spoiled.
Hashtag blessed.
Yeah. I could honestly, I mean, Favre is like the reason I was a Packers fan. I could honestly say that. And so many people probably can, but I didn't grow up in Wisconsin. So like as a kid who was a front runner, but also just like looking for just like someone to kind of idolize. And I think we talked about this last week, but like idealize, it's like, holy, like this is just like a Southern kid, like came from nothing, had a rough time, like bounced back from that. And now he's a hero. So he's the reason. Yeah, I mean, like,
that
he's...
Story. I mean, they used to talk about that, you know? They used to say, like, if he wanted to be governor of Wisconsin, he could be.
Yeah, and he's the reason I became a Packers fan. So, like, there's never... I block out the stuff, and that's why the Vikings jersey doesn't even really bother me. Like, I'm always going to have a soft spot for it. Like, this sounds really dumb, but no football player is ever going to make me feel the way Brett Favre makes me feel.
No,
you know what I mean? Like,
that
sounds really weird. Yeah, no, seriously.
I agree 100%.
I've made that analogy before.
And I love Rodgers. You know, I think Rodgers is at this point almost indubitably a better, I'm air quoting, you can't see that on the air, but like, I'm air quoting, a better quarterback than Brett Favre.
Right.
But Brett Favre was so special.
Right.
I mean, and Rodgers is totally special too, but it's a different kind of special. Favre was like such a human being, you know?
Yeah.
He had the public struggles with addiction. He had, you know, Deanna getting cancer, all this stuff. And he just, and he was so consistent. It was like, I mean, Favre is the closest thing I have to like a football family member who I consider like, oh yeah, my crazy uncle is coming over for dinner every Sunday. Like that's Favre.
And Rodgers is almost too perfect. I've made this analogy before and it's not perfect, but Rodgers to me is like, I'm going to marry him. Like, he's the safe bet. My family loves him. He's successful. Like, he's never going to leave me. But Favre, I'm never going to, like, forget that fling with Favre.
So you're going to cheat on Aaron Rodgers with Brett Favre.
But
no,
all the same.
He's my first. And I'll never, like, a part of me is always going
so
to
So after Aaron Rodgers
that.
Dies, you're going to look up Brett Favre, send him an email, and be
see
like,
see where he is,
what's
and
up,
he's just
Brett?
Still there
How's
in Hattiesburg, still jacked, throwing the ball at, like, fucking unbelievable speed somehow.
Let's go fishing.
Yeah. You're going to call him in his, like, deer blind or whatever, duck blind, and I'm bad Wisconsinite now. Get mixing up my hunting.
You
equipment.
Have been in New York for far too long.
That's true.
Friend.
No, I was never a hunter.
I was never a hunter either.
Yeah.
I don't like to kill defenseless animals either.
We're losing listeners. Are jumping
I'm pro hunting. Yeah. I want to distance myself from Alex's comment. I'm pro hunting. I'm just not. I grew up in the city.
Let's not get into that.
Are we going to do favorite Favre memories?
Is that let's go for it. What do you got?
For me, is it's a game from 2004. It was a loss, which is kind of like prototypically Favre in a way. And it was a game against the Giants. I think it was in October. They lost 14-7, and that 7 points came on a Brett Favre 4th-and-5, I think, touchdown. Where he had been concussed on first down, came out for 2 downs, and then, you know, it was a clear field goal situation. It was like 4th-and-5 from the 28. Mike McCarthy wouldn't go for that. And Favre just runs back on the field, calls a play, throws a touchdown to Javon Walker, and then you don't see him again for the rest of the game because it was he was clearly concussed and did not know where he was. But to me, that's like prototypical Favre.
Am I correct in remembering that that he does not recall that play?
I don't think he remembers it. No. And I feel like the Packers said later, they're like, oh, I shouldn't have sent him back. I don't think they actually sent him back into the game. I got the feeling that Brett Favre just put himself back in. Yeah.
He probably wasn't even aware that that's what he was doing.
Yeah, he's like, what down is... give me the ball, and I'll throw a touchdown, but I don't know where I am. And to me, that's prototypical Favre. It has everything. It's got, like, the callous disregard for his own body. Incredible play against the odds that should never work on 4th-and-5. It's got the home run element he talked about in the soundbite, and they still lost. I mean, to me, that's prototypical Favre.
Yeah, it might have been a regular season game, but the walk-off shot to Greg Jennings, for some reason, I think it's just because it's the element of the walk-off. It was against the Denver Broncos at that time, whatever they call Mile High now. I don't even think they have
Qualcomm. Qualcomm Stadium,
maybe Invesco. It was like
Qualcomm.
Most
might be
recently,
San Diego.
Sports Authority. Yeah, Qualcomm San Diego, but whatever. And it's
Carl's
the first.
Jr.
It's the first
stadium.
Play of overtime, and it was made better by the fact that. Greg Jennings actually pretty recently, doing the whole media tour after he retired, told the story of Brett Favre in the huddle. Now, this is Favre's final year. He had a pretty good year. They obviously lost in the NFC Championship game. But in the huddle, said, called the play and said, we're going to end this on the first. It's the first play of overtime against the Broncos. And said, we're going for it all. We're winning the game right now. Like, this is it. And then what do you know? Mike Tirico with that famous call. Where he just throws a bomb to Jennings, first play of overtime, game is over. And it's the walk-off element. It's that there's nothing better. It's the reason that I think the Detroit Lions Hail Mary last year with Aaron Rodgers to Richard Rodgers is probably better than the Jeff Janis one, because there's something about the game ending on that play. That's an amazing one. And I only chose that because using the Monday Night Football game against the Raiders is almost like there's too many plays from that game that you can really choose from.
I mean, or like the shovel pass. I mean, that's the other thing that sticks out for me.
Yeah. I used to love when he would block. When like he
oh,
would
when
just,
he would like roll his arms
to...
up in like a weird little human torpedo and dive into somebody's legs.
Dive into people. Yeah.
Give Mike Holmgren an aneurysm every time he did that.
Yeah. Zach, what you got anything other than what we've said so far as like your best Brett Favre moment memory?
Yeah, you know, mine's really cliche, but the Super Bowl.
31.
Yeah.
The
first one, yeah. No, and the reason is because, I mean, obviously it's the Super Bowl, it's my childhood, but so obviously at a young age, you know, I'm absorbing football almost like, you know, as an experience with my dad, and like seeing things through the lens of my dad, who is a lifelong Milwaukee and lifelong Packer fan, and suffered through so much shitty Packers football, 30 years of shitty football, and he never missed a game. And so just getting to like share that moment with him and just seeing how, you know, it's one of those moments in an older person's life where they're like, wow, I never thought I would live to see this thing happened. And then there it is. And we got to watch it together, and that was really something. And then a few years later, we got to watch another one. So, that's mine. Close second is the Raiders game when Favre's dad died. And that's another cliche one. I'm not really busting out any obscure moments here.
I feel like such a Favre hipster.
You know,
I'm like, a losing game against the Giants in 2004.
Hey, man, just between the two of us, you know, that's just, we represent the duality.
It wasn't even on TV. I was listening on the radio.
Walked 15 miles.
Yeah,
so that's what I got.
Nice. All right, well, Antonio Freeman has plenty of memories with Brett Favre, including catching a touchdown in that Super Bowl. So let's talk to Free.
number you dialed is...
Acme Packing Company.
It's our pleasure now to be joined by a Packers Hall of Famer. He'll be in Canton this weekend for the induction of Brett Favre into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He caught more touchdowns from Brett Favre than anybody throughout Favre's career. It is Antonio Freeman joining us now. Free, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Just getting excited for the season and, you know, looking forward to sharing a great moment with a great player who we spent a lot of time together. And as you mentioned, had to work a lot of long hours together to achieve that kind of success. So just kind of want to see him off. It'll be an historic moment. And, you know, it's kind of climax to everything he's done for the game of football, state of Wisconsin, Green Bay Packers. And it's kind of a tribute to his legacy. So definitely looking forward to that.
Yeah, so you're obviously, for people who don't know, very involved in the Packers organization. You're in Green Bay pretty frequently, so there was never really, I don't think, any bad blood between you and the Packers. But with Favre, that isn't the case. Now, you were there last year when he had his number retired in the Packers Ring of Honor and for Thanksgiving. How much did that mean anything to you for him to kind of be with you and the other guys who are kind of remembered in a positive light? Was there ever any feeling from you like, oh, I hope this happens for him, being that he was such a big part of your career there?
Well, with people today and social media and social networking, we didn't have that when we played. So that wasn't a big part of our lives. And, you know, it's so influential now. With what goes on social media and things of that nature. So it's easy to influence others. I just hope people saw him for the player he was or wasn't in their eyes. You know, everybody has a different opinion of what greatness is. But he was very instrumental in making Green Bay an exciting place to come for football again, because you knew you were coming to watch top three, you know, for a number of 5 or 6, 7 years there, definitely the top quarterback in all of football. So it brought excitement and it gave fans a reason to want to cheer for the Green Bay Packers. It wasn't so much his stats. You know, if you're a fan, you say, hey, well, he threw a lot of touchdowns and, hey, he threw a lot of interceptions as well. But it was more about how he played the game. You know, he played the game like a child. He played the game with a lot of heart, passion. He played through a lot of injuries. He went through a lot of things just to be able to be healthy on Sunday. And that's why he had that long string of career starts. So you have to look at what he meant to the Green Bay Packers, along with Ron Wolf and Mike Holmgren, you can't discount, and Barb Harlan, those guys who were very instrumental as well. But on Sunday, it was the Brett Favre show, and, man, that's what I'm going to remember him as, you know, that crowd being just as loud as anything when he announced the offensive team, and they announced Brett Favre number 4. If you liked him or not, you couldn't hear the ones that didn't like him. All you heard was a long, large roar from the fans that really appreciated the way he played the game.
There were some pretty big cheers for 86, too, though. And I have to imagine that you enjoyed being the beneficiary of his style. So we were watching the Gruden quarterback camp, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that. But one of the things he said on it before the part where you joined them was, no matter what, he never really told anyone explicitly. He was always going for the home run. For you as a receiver, how fun was it to play with a quarterback who carried that mentality?
I got to tell you, Alex, I mean, it was sometimes, man, it was like being 8, 10, 11 years old again. I mean, it was like we did everything but put the rocks in the dirt and draw up the plays that way and use rocks to say, hey, you're going here, you're going there. I mean, the way it went down, the style in which we did it, it was so old school. You know, it felt like we were actually putting rocks on the ground, making up plays, but just through eye contact, through a head nod, through a hand wiggle, just from lifting his leg one way, we were able to recreate all of those things that we did as a kid and implement it on the field on Sundays. And, you know, that was the great thing about playing with Favre. It was unpredictable. You never know what you were going to get with this guy. And if you were the number one, two, three, four option on a pass play, he would always tell the number four and number three option to be alert, because he could see so much of what was going on from opposing defenses. It was a great joy. And I'm just sitting here smiling right now, just thinking about how many times we made up plays and how many times we pissed off Coach Holmgren. So it's good to laugh at him now.
Even on running plays, you got to be alert, right? I know they highlighted that slant you'd always run on run plays, and eventually threw it and you're off to the races.
The one-step slant.
You know, when you have a guy that has that much respect, power, and understanding of the game of football, that even the longest tenured coaches have to allow that leverage for him to implement those plays, because even though it might not be practical, when he runs it, it works. And anything that works 66% of the time or better is worth having around.
Totally. I have a question about coaching. I mean, how much of a difference did you see during the Holmgren years and then after that with Sherman at all? Like, was Sherman less inclined to let Favre be Favre?
I think when you're the second wave coach who's worked under Holmgren and worked alongside of Favre throughout his tenure as an assistant coach there, that being Mike Sherman, that allowed him to have a relationship with the quarterback very similar to what Coach Holmgren had. But what Coach Holmgren had that none of the coaches after, until McCarthy got there, and I wasn't there with McCarthy, so I don't know how McCarthy runs his ship. I do know how he runs his ship. He runs a really high-class, tight ship. But my point is, he was more accountable to me when Holmgren was the coach. You know, when he made those mistakes, Holmgren would be standing there, all 6'7", 270 pounds of him, just staring down at Brett with his mug broke down. And it was kind of one of those things where when you're like a kid and you did something wrong, you're just coming off the field and you just hang your head and disgrace almost, and just hope that they don't yell as hard. But to me, his best years as far as touchdown and interceptions ratios were during the Holmgren era. I mean, I think there was more accountability there. I think there was a tighter leash there. I think when Sherman came in, and it just was different. I mean, I think we became more of a running team more when Sherman got there. So even philosophy-wise, it was just a different type ship once Holmgren ran there. Holmgren wanted to throw the ball every down if he could. So to me, there was more accountability for the mistakes that Brett made throughout his career while Holmgren was there.
It almost seems like kind of like a football father-son relationship between Favre and Holmgren.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, that's a great way of categorizing it. And, there was a ton of respect there, but hey, when dad's not looking, hey, your son's going to do something that he's probably not supposed to. And, you know, that's the kind of relationship that it was like a family in that locker room. And, you know, when you have a head coach like Mike Holmgren and you had guys like Brett, Reggie in the locker room, that made it a fantastic place to be every day at work.
On that that ESPN special with Gruden that you guys did, they highlighted a play where, you know, that famous touchdown run from Favre against the Falcons way back, and they told the story of how Holmgren was screaming, "Don't scramble, don't scramble," as he was jogging out to the huddle, and obviously he scrambles and scores. So that's a good one, but I'm sure there's a million. Do you have a favorite Brett Favre defying Mike Holmgren's story, whether it paid off or not, one that kind of sticks out as the funniest during your time there?
I mean, just that play you talked about with the Falcons, that's just the type of competitor that he was. I can do this. I know he doesn't think I can do it, and I know he doesn't think I should do it, but I can do this, and I'm going to do it. that also parallels that father-son relationship. You know, he's just with every moment in a football game, particularly late in the game when we're trailing by less than 7 points. We knew that we had a really good time, I mean, a really good chance to win a football game because we had that type of guy running our ship, a guy that, hey, I don't like the plays that the coaches are calling, so this might make them mad, but we're going to run this play instead. But, guys, we got to make it work. And it was just those type of moments where you knew he went off script and you knew that he had enough confidence in us because it took 11 guys to make that play work, that he was still going to go along with breaking the rules, breaking his father's rules, that father-son relationship, and he had confidence in us. So that made us want to succeed and deliver, more or less, for our quarterback, who would in turn be delivering for our coach.
It seems, both in watching the Gruden and in speaking to you, it sounds like the most, like, trust and kind of familiarity and a kind of belief in one another might have been, like, the most important thing for playing for with Favre. Like, it's not about drops or, you know, physical ability. It's about kind of being on the same page and believing both that Favre can get whatever he wants to get done, and that you'll be where you're supposed to be, or you'll keep a play alive after he scrambles for 5 seconds. Like, that kind of trust seems to be the most important part of Favre. You know, because I can almost imagine Favre being like any Manziel type burnout if he doesn't have this kind of perfect storm of personnel around him that he feels good about and confident about. Would you say that's true?
I mean, we played with a legend. And that's what motivated us every day, is that we knew he was bound for the Hall of Fame, and we knew this was something very special to be a part of. So happiness was the one thing. He was approachable, impressionable, and he was one of the guys inside that locker room. And just that fire to win, like I said, it just made everything else around it better. Just because we knew this doesn't come around every day. And we all knew it. I mean, we were fortunate enough to play with somebody on the other side of the ball who's a legend, Reggie White. And then he could get the sack that could get us the ball back. And we just always knew we had a chance because we worked hard. We knew how much work we put in at practice. We knew the time our quarterback spent with the entire offense before, during, and after practice just to make sure that everything was on the right page. So, I mean, just being a leader, a legend, and being able to put up year after year. I mean, three-time NFL MVP. And a lot of it kind of speaks for itself.
Yeah. Just a couple free. Given, I mean, the relationships that you've been talking about, especially with Coach Holmgren, what was your level of shock when he left? Like, did you see that coming at all?
I didn't believe it. A lot of the older veterans who had better connections than me at that point in time in my career, had said he was leaving. And, you know, I was still a little naive kid. I'm like, no, he's not leaving. Why would he leave here? It's so great here. I mean, the winning, da-da-da-da-da. You know, I had yet to go through my first contract renegotiation. So, you know, I'm still playing on my rookie year contract. And I'm like, no, he'll play. But when they started to talk about the numbers and the job responsibility, that's when I started to say, hey, if I were him, it's about opportunity in life. And it was more opportunity somewhere for him to go, somewhere for him to run his own ship, some way for him to hire his own personnel. And it was probably a lifelong dream of his. I was upset because I knew I and Brett, amongst others on the team, had a lot of great years still left in us. We knew the system. We didn't have to change a lot. and we knew each other, and accountability and responsibility level was always established. During my 4 years with Holmgren, you know, we were NFC championship bound every single year. So for me, I was still fantasy land. I thought it would last forever, and we'd sail into the sunlight. But when you start talking about the economics and the ability to secure your future and your families from all the hard work and years that you put in, I kind of understood it. But there's still a level of upset in me that we couldn't finish something that I thought would have been so, so special.
Yeah. I think you could say this, too, without it being a slight on Mike Sherman. And Favre said it himself. But do you believe, like, Holmgren stays, you know, you guys have another ring?
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, everything was there. You didn't have to change anything. You didn't have to rebuild trust in one another. You didn't have to put in all the work that it really takes to adjust to a new coach. And even though Sherman had been assistant at Green Bay, you know, he had left, and then he had came back to be a coach. So you have to rebuild those relationships. Sometimes with all those different personalities in that locker room, sometimes that doesn't happen overnight. And I just think that Holmgren had everything together. Guys were accountable. Guys had a fear of him. Guys had a fear of his consequences. And, you know, the level of respect that guys have for him was definitely there. Because when you're Mike Holmgren, it doesn't matter who you are. You get yelled at the same. It's not a fake. It's not a game. You don't call him into the office and say, hey, I'm going to make a scene and get in you today just to let everybody know. No, it's natural when Mike Holmgren does it. You know, so, again, just the intimidation factor alone, and I'm sure you can ask any guy that played on those teams how intimidated they were of Mike Holmgren, because his favorite saying was, I'll put you on a Greyhound with a brown paper bag and an apple in it. And he meant every word of it. We saw that man cut guys at practice, cut guys for different reasons. So, again, it was already set up for success. But it's just the little things that really have to take place to recreate that with another coach. It's like a relationship in life. Hey, it's going to take a while for things to click and get back on track after you just got out of a relationship, you know, with a former coach or what have you.
Yeah. All right. We saw you on TV catching passes in the gym. Does it still hurt when Favre throws you that that quick slant?
They always hurt. You know, I don't know if my eyesight is bad now that I'm a little older or what, but that ball seemed to be coming a lot faster than it did back then. I'm probably just out of sync. You know, back then I was catching, you know, 200 footballs per day. Just as a habit. You know, now I don't catch 2 footballs per day just out of habit. So just getting used to catching a football again, let alone catching it from a gunslinger like Favre, wow. I mean, then they wanted me to actually run routes. I would say, hey, man, I can't put all of those motions together and then turn around and snap my head around and catch one of those fireballs. So I said, I can get in position and try to catch one of those footballs. And, you know, it was a lot of fun.
Really nice of Antonio Freeman to make time for us. He's gone through the car wash, plenty of interviews. He's now in Canton, going to be there for Favre's Hall of Fame induction. Really interesting stuff, too. It kind of seems like, looking back on it now, you almost take for granted how good we had it. We talk about going quarterback to quarterback, but how about the coaching staff? I mean, the way people talk about Mike Holmgren in comparison to other coaches that coached during that era, when they were still winning, is something, including Free, who basically saying, like, Holmgren's a father figure to Favre, and all the freaking coaches that came from underneath him, like the Belichick coaching tree, in my mind, pales in comparison to totally. The Holmgren coaching tree when you look at guys who are still going today.
Yeah, and management, too. I mean, Schneider in Seattle, like, I think it's...
Thompson was a scout who had to watch film on Favre to tell Ron Wolf whether or not he liked him.
I mean, you look at the mid-90s Packers, it's basically like a perfect storm of football talent, like Reed and Gruden and everybody. And, like, even this year, Doug Peterson's like a head coach, and it's like...
Yeah, backup quarterbacks.
Last 20 years of the NFL are basically shaped by the Packers or Bill Belichick, but mostly the Packers, I would say.
Right. And
even, no bias.
Yeah. And it extends to Bill Walsh, and I get that. And I know that like Belichick extends to Bill Parcells, and it goes on and on and on. But just the, you just take like, at some point in the room, right? Like if you, in a team meeting between the coaches and the players are just all guys who, like you said, for the past two decades have been an integral part of the NFL. So yeah, I thought that was really cool to hear. And it kind of sounds like they all have a little bit of a sense that there was, even with how fun that was, like a little bit left to be desired. That, well, if like Holmgren hadn't have left.
Unfinished business.
Because Favre, yeah, at the end of the day, he's got a bunch of records. He has one Super Bowl title. And when you're measuring greatness and you're looking at rings, which is total bullshit, but people will kind of just, you know, Favre probably doesn't get the recognition as greatest of all time. And a big part of that is one ring. But I think almost we underrate how losing a coach he had so much chemistry with,
yeah,
like Free talked about, impacted that greatly. I mean, they kind of had to rebuild.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, Free made that pretty clear, I think, is that it kind of was a reset in some ways. I mean, and they also chose to do a reset by hiring two coaches in 2 years. I mean, Ray Rhodes didn't get really a fair shake as a coach. I think a lot of people agree with that.
Was he 8-8?
He was 8-8, and then Sherman was 4-12 the next season and got like, you know, and got GM duties and yada. Yeah. And oh my God,
remind me again, what's the difference between those two guys?
No comment. Sherman was also a terrible GM.
Yeah.
I mean, I appreciate Mike Sherman as a coach in a lot of ways, but like his drafts were
terrible.
Awful.
GM.
BJ Sanders in the third round.
Oof.
Like,
oof. Like, thank God for
Ahmad Carroll. Like, oh man, there was so much wasted potential. I mean, and again, we're like spoiled, you know, we're complaining about like an almost perennial playoff team, but it was a window. It was a window that got closed basically when Holmgren left. And I guess that's the flip side of what we were talking about with, you know, this kind of abundance of wealth that the Packers have, personnel wise, is that there's only so many places to move up and people got to move out. And I think, you know, we see some of that now. I mean, like, sure, Ted Thompson's getting not crapped on, but, you know, I think he denied interviews to a few people on the staff, and people are kind of like, well, how long can you do that before somebody...
Well, and I think that's a big reason why they kind of rearranged the structure of their coaching staff, and that's another thing that's probably underrated about Mike McCarthy. Like, I think it'd be fair to say a lot of staffs would have lost Tom Clements already.
Mm-hmm.
Edgar Bennett is someone that gets a ton of buzz, so they promote him to offensive coordinator, who doesn't call plays, and the offensive coordinator doesn't even call plays, so I don't really know what he does.
Well, that's the thing, is that at what point does like it become almost like an organizational bloat? Like, how many coaches is too many coaches?
I think we're there.
Well, at least now we have like a real wide receivers coach, because that was a weirdly questionable oversight.
Thank
last
God
season.
For Luke Getsy, right?
Yeah.
Those tennis balls and the bricks and everything that they're bringing along,
mixing it up.
We have been spoiled. Well, actually, this is just popped in my head, but thinking about it, then how Ted Thompson was there scout. It's crazy that Ted all the way back then was a scout working under Ron Wolf. Are you more nervous about the post Rodgers era or the post Thompson era?
I'm more nervous about the post Rodgers era.
I would agree with
I don't think they're going to be that far apart, though. That's the thing.
No.
Like, I would like, like, if Ted were like retiring now, like, it'd be like, well, we got Aaron
temporarily,
to keep the next guy like afloat.
Honestly, I really like Brett Hundley, and I would love to be able to keep him until Rodgers is done, but I don't think it's going to happen. And
I mean, I think Rodgers got like six more years. And
no,
Hundley
definitely
could only
for
sit
sure
on the bench for so long.
And so I'm worried, but I, you know, I got to put my faith in the Most High, Ted Thompson.
Yeah.
Like,
great.
There will be a plan. The creator has a master plan is all I can say to myself, but enjoy the moment, you know, cause we have been blessed and you know, maybe it'll be our middle age on a 30-year epically bad run. It seems unlikely, but you never know.
Any glimpse into Ted Thompson, the human, if he is a human, is something we enjoy, which I thought was really fun about Rob Domofsky's oral history of the Brett Favre trade. There was a little anecdote in there, and it was funny because at this time, it's 1992, Ted Thompson's a scout, and he explained how he locked himself in a dark room to watch film. Ron Wolf comes in, says, "What do you think?" Ted Thompson says, "Well, what do you think?" Ron Wolf says, "Well, I think I'm ready to trade a number one draft pick for him." And Ted Thompson's response, like his big analysis after watching all this Favre film, was, I think you ought to do that. Like, that was literally the quote from him. And then, boom, like, case closed. Brett Favre's coming to Green Bay. So that's pretty cool. You mentioned Brett Hundley. I hope we get to see him. I think the Hall of Fame game on Sunday would be a little bit watered down if we don't even get a look at Hundley.
Yeah. It looks like not, right? Or is he questionable?
The latest scuttlebutt, I think, is that they're we'll know better tonight, right?
Yeah, as we tape this, so obviously we're uncertain, but I'm a little bit excited to watch some football this weekend.
I think the report yesterday was that he wasn't ruled out. I know that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I'm excited for football. It's fucking football.
Football!
Yeah. We get physical.
Yes.
So next week will be our first one where we could at least, hopefully, where we could talk about some kind of action and recap something. And as we go forward, we'll get into a little bit of a rhythm here. You know, we're getting closer and closer to the season. We're going to try to bring on as many interesting people as possible. Our goal is to have a guest per week, whether it be someone you're very familiar with from the Packers media, players, former players, really smart football people who can help us dumb football people too.
Again with the duality.
Yeah, exactly. That's the theme of this episode. So we're looking forward to that. By the way, one thing you should definitely check out if you haven't already at acmepackingcompany.com. There is some new gear for the 2016 season. Bear down shirts and hoodies for the James Joneses out there if you prefer a hoodie to a shirt. It's really cool, and all the proceeds, if you were to buy this gear, it's got, you know, a Packers fan hunting and a bear down. Obviously, it just says bear down. It's clever and cool, and you can wear it when they play the Bears. All the proceeds go to the MAC Fund, which, if you're not familiar with, Aaron Rodgers is heavily involved in. Midwest athletes against childhood cancer. So that's a great cause, and obviously something that you would want to have, so you could troll your neighbors to the south, the fibs.
I think all the merchandise on the site, all the proceeds go to the MAC Fund.
So go ahead and check that out if you haven't done so already. We continue to encourage interaction. We want to we do this for you guys to be able to listen to something that you don't hate. I think is our goal.
Hope you don't hate it.
Yeah. So get at us on Twitter. Email the show about what you like, what you don't like. Give us a rating on iTunes and subscribe. Acme Packing Company Podcast, the APC Podcast, as we like to call it. And the email, by the way, is theapcpodcast@gmail.com. Closing thoughts, anybody? What do you got going on? You got your job interview out of the way. You get to relax a little bit.
I'm
going to
finish Deadwood Season 3 and then feel like existential angst because it doesn't really end on there's no closure.
They canceled it?
Canceled it. Yeah. But, man, Deadwood is really great.
I
can't recommend it enough.
I still, we were talking about this the other day, but I got one episode in, and there was a lot of violence against women, and I just kind of...
as far as HBO shows go, like it is no Game of Thrones in that regard.
Okay.
It's better.
Okay.
Game of Thrones has multiple rape scenes.
Yeah, no.
It's got...
Game of Thrones is I don't watch Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But...
I guess I give Game of Thrones a pass because it's more of a fantastical universe, whereas Deadwood...
The rape isn't real?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Have you guys watched The Night Of? That's what I'm into now.
I've heard it's good.
It's moving insanely slow, but really interesting. And things that are shot well in New York always interest me. I feel like that's something I'll always get into. But it's an 8-episode thing. They're halfway through, and nothing's happened yet.
I love it.
Absolutely nothing. But still very, very compelling. All right, we'll catch you next week. Enjoy the Favre nostalgia. You've all earned it. And, yeah,
we'll
catch
you
next
soon.
Week.